Right, we're going to be talking motoring with Chira de Siena of cars.co.za. So now is the time to start dialing 021-446-0567 if you have a motoring question. Just a reminder, please not to ask questions about valuation of vehicles. Anything else, you're very welcome to phone through, whether you are weighing up alternatives for a purchase or want some advice on getting the most out of your vehicle. 021-446-0567 is the number to dial, and you can leave a voice note on 072-567-1567. Chira, always lovely to have you with us on the show. Welcome to this afternoon's edition.
Hi, Pippa. Thanks so much.
We'll start with a little bit of news on fuel prices and a car review before we move to any of the listener questions. Chira, welcome news from the Automobile Association. It looks like the fuel price might be going down a little bit next week.
It will be, yeah, between 8 and 18 cents for petrol, depending on the grade, and 14 cents for diesel. So not monumental amounts, but at the same time, it is a movement in the positive direction, and a direction which I think every South African will appreciate, because the reality is that, you know, with the attack in Saudi Arabia, there was a lot of concern that the price was going to spike. Yep. But a lot of that has simmered down now. And also we've had a bit of a stronger rand, which has helped our under recovery as well. So, yeah, we're looking at a little bit of a drop. And I think at the moment, it's a little bit of good news, which we could all use.
Which everybody needs, of course. So just a reminder that those are estimates at this point from the AA. The actual final formula will be calculated and shared with us on Friday evening, and then the price changes will take effect from next week, Wednesday, the 6th of November. Okay, let's talk about the car review of the week. Chira, it's a Mercedes, fourth generation Mercedes-Benz GLE you've had a chance to drive. Tell us more.
So the GLE, you might remember, is the ML. Mercedes-Benz actually changed the name of that model range to fall in line with the rest of their lineup. So it is funnily enough, their second most luxurious SUV and their second largest SUV. You can still get a GLS, which is even larger, which I can barely fathom, because that GLE is a monster. I mean, you look at a parking bay and you think, oh, I can definitely fit in there, and then you just can't, because it's just a massive car. And you've got all these parking aids and cameras and everything trying to help you, but the reality is the thing is large. So if you're not too happy in a large SUV, I'd suggest maybe looking at the GLC, so a smaller one, which will help you a bit in your parking endeavors. That being said, it is also one of the most luxurious cars I have ever driven. It is, but for the price, I think it also should be. They started over 1.2 million rand, but it really made me think of how unbelievably luxurious cars have become and how filled with tech they've become. And this is a bit of a double-edged sword for me, because you've got this incredible luxury and tech, and it makes your driving experience extremely pleasant. It's sort of like driving around in a very luxurious lounge suite that can also massage you, which is nice. And there's a lot of safety features as well, which is great. But in my opinion, cars like this now are so complicated that after the warranty period ends, it's effectively obsolete, because to maintain that car is just going to be unbelievably expensive.
Yeah.
And I felt this way about some cars for a while. You know, I drove a BMW X5 M50D recently, and that's a car with four turbochargers and a 3-liter diesel engine, and that for me is just four opportunities for something very expensive to break, which is quite possibly going to happen outside your warranty period. So I feel a little bit deflated, I suppose, by the fact that cars these days just seem to be being manufactured almost to be obsolete in pursuit of this perfect and incredible driving experience. And of course, you can go out and buy something like the car I'm sitting in right now, which is a Suzuki Ertiga, where the technology is from sort of the 50s and nothing ever really goes wrong, which is nice. But these top-end luxury cars, I just sat in that GLE, and although I was happy and comfortable and enjoyed my time in it, I just couldn't help but think that in 5 years' time, you just got to throw this thing away, you know?
Yeah.
And I suppose the lesson is not necessarily for the person who's buying new, because that person is covered by the warranty. But if you're buying secondhand, I just think you're in for a bit of a nightmare trying to look after a car like that. And so the value of the thing just plummets. And I think that's the effect of it as well.
Okay, thanks. That's a very sort of honest assessment that certainly the luxury is there, the technology is there, all the comforts you could ask for at a price tag, but be mindful of what that means further down the line in terms of maintaining the vehicle. Appreciate the candor there, Chiro. Okay, we're going to move on to listener questions. A reminder, you can get dialing now on 021-446-0567, or you can do what this person's already done, send a voice note or a WhatsApp to 072-567-1567. The listener is currently driving a Trend EcoSport 2015, which they love. Says, I am, however, looking for an automatic car. What do you recommend? The EcoSport Trend Auto, perhaps?
Yeah, I think if you're happy with your car and you're happy with the service you're getting, which is, you know, one of course, the most important aspects of owning a vehicle, I would just stay in it. If I'm not mistaken, you can get an auto diesel and an auto petrol in the new EcoSport. So probably worth upgrading. But I can't think of many cars out there on the market which do not offer an auto in that segment. I'm pretty sure you can get an auto just about everywhere. I know, for instance, with a Nissan Qashqai, you can't get a diesel auto. So that's something to keep in mind. But if you're staying in the same segment as the EcoSport, you're looking at cars like the Renault Captur or the new VW T-Cross, and both of those have auto options as well. So it's, you know, maybe shop around for a good deal. Maybe go test drive the other cars in the segment, and maybe, you know, one sort of tickles your fancy more than the EcoSport. It's definitely worth shopping around. And you know, like I said, potentially stay where you are, you know, and stay happy, and just be aware that, sometimes with automatic gearboxes, there's a bit of a price to pay on consumption. So you do have that, you know, that convenience factor, and it's nice to sit in traffic in an auto as opposed to clutching in every 5 seconds. But you will lose a little bit on fuel, which is one of the downsides.
I wasn't actually aware of that, I must say. The car I'm currently in is the first automatic I've ever driven, and it's not something I'd been acutely aware of. Can you elaborate a little bit? What is it about the automatic that makes you consume more fuel?
Sure. So it's sort of it's a little bit of one of those sort of legacy issues which has hung over into this day and age, into this modern age of motoring, but which is actually not necessarily a truth anymore. It's more of a perception. So the inability to control your engine speeds and the automatic box only sometimes having four gears means that the amount of ratios that the engine could basically drive the car with were fairly limited. These days, you're looking at 6-speed, 7-speed, 8-speed, even 10-speed boxes, and those are designed to increase efficiency. So your modern auto is not necessarily as inefficient as an old auto, and not necessarily any different to a manual gearbox. That being said, you can negate many of these effects and many of these issues by just changing your driving style. So if a very good driver in an auto is driving more economically than a very good, not so great driver or not so economically minded driver in a manual, then that will offset the difference. So it is a lot of it down to driving style, and often the difference is so negligible that you might potentially not notice. But if you're in a more modern car, then it's actually even possible that an automatic might be more efficient than the manual counterparts, such as the technology that we have these days.
That's really interesting. Okay, thanks for the explanation. Appreciate it. Right, questions are flooding in on the WhatsApp line and the SMS. Let's go to the SMS line first. Somebody's making a choice. Okay, what do you recommend between the Ford or the Toyota for the Isuzu double cab? I'm assuming they're wanting to replace an Isuzu double cab, and they're looking at a Ford or a Toyota. They're not saying which models, though. It's a little cryptic. Do you understand?
It's quite interesting, because the research that we've got from our Cars Awards consumer data survey suggests that one of the brands which retains its customers the most is actually Isuzu. Mm-hmm. So people get out of an Isuzu and into another Isuzu. They don't really shop elsewhere. So it's quite interesting. Perhaps this person has just had a bit of a bad experience, maybe servicing, or perhaps just got a little bit of a lemon of the car and wants to move on. The other thing for me is Isuzu is often not as the tech in the Isuzu is a little bit old, not as sort of modern as what you're getting in a Ranger, for instance, these days. So perhaps they want to upgrade with some comfort features. There is actually, if you don't mind me directing people to our YouTube channel, we've done a very detailed comparison between the Hilux and the Ranger, the latest version. And I suppose a summary thereof for me was that the Ranger outshone the Hilux in terms of day-to-day ride comfort, sort of the quality of ride on the road, the noise coming into the cabin, for instance. It's a more car-like experience, where the Hilux is still a bit of a bucky-like experience. Mm-hmm. Another place where the Ranger does a bit better for me than the Hilux is in the infotainment. The system is just a bit more comprehensive. You also can only get sat-nav in the very, very top-spec Hilux, so if that's important to you, then that's something to keep in mind. In terms of look and feel of the car, you do have to spend a little bit more on the Ranger to get it to look, in inverted commas, cool, I suppose, if that's sort of the look you're going for. But, you know, owners tend to like those sort of roll hoops at the back and that sort of thing. And often the Ranger, that's an optional extra. I also like that you get an extra year on your warranty with the Ranger. But then again, the Toyota really does have a reputation for reliability, which the Ranger does not. At least in the stories I've heard and the data that we've had. Yeah. So in terms of reliability of product and aftermarket service, according to the data we have, Toyota does outshine Ford. So it's one of these instances for me where the product from Ford is better, a better product to enjoy and to live with, but the potential service and reliability is better from the other brand, but I wouldn't necessarily be happy in their product. So it's a little bit of a catch-22, and I suppose you're just going to have to make the decision as to, you know, what you're looking for and what you're willing to put up with.
Okay, thanks. Before we go to the next motoring question, let me just quickly divert into news. Just for those who are wanting updates on what is going on in the CBD, I am seeing footage on TV of a quite heavy police presence in front of the crowd of foreign nationals. I gather there were some quite aggressive scenes earlier. I'm seeing a lot of complaints on Twitter and on the other social media channels from people saying police have been heavy-handed in their response, that they have been unsympathetic towards those with small children in that crowd in particular. Kay WhatsApping to say they are behaving like a bunch of hooligans and foreign nationals are being assaulted in the CBD. It is an ongoing story. We do have an Eyewitness News reporter on scene, and she will be feeding through an update in the news bulletin at 2 o'clock. So please just hold on for another couple of minutes for the latest news on that one from Kaylin Palm in the Eyewitness News at 2 o'clock. Right, let's get back to the cars. We still have some time in hand. If you're wanting to call in, the number is 021-446-0567. Judy on the WhatsApp line says, I have a 9-year-old Golf 6 1.4 TSI, which I love. It's got leather seats and warmers. It's done 150,000 kilometers. The question is, where to from here? I'm 61 and I still love it. To replace it with the same would just be too expensive for me now. What advice if I were to consider a downgrade? Judy, if you love it that much, drive it for as long as you can is my instinctive response. But what would you say to her, Chura?
So, I mean, let's say, for instance, that, or let's take it for granted that she'd like to stay in the VW brand. There are quite a lot of options. Golf 8 has been announced internationally. It'll only be arriving in South Africa at the end of next year, unfortunately. But that already will have the fact that the market knows the Golf 8 is coming will start to suppress the prices of the Golf 7. And the Golf 7 is a particularly nice car. It's actually, in my opinion, quite a leap up from the Golf 6. And I have a feeling that the listener might be able to get into a fairly low mileage young Golf 7 for probably about a bit more than her car is possibly worth on trade-in, but not massively more. So you might be financing, say, between 50 to 100,000 rand if you need the finance, or you might be putting that in out of your own pocket. But yeah, you're looking probably, her car is probably worth now maybe in the region of about 125 somewhere there, and getting into a Golf 7, you probably do from around 220 to 250. So that could be a decent sort of sideways movement if you don't mind taking on some installments as well. Another car in the Volkswagen stable that I would look at is the Tiguan. It's a Golf-based car, so if you're used to a Golf, I think you'll be very happy with it. Also gives you that extra little bit of ride height, which can be quite nice in that slightly higher seating position. And Tiguans are also, you'll have to go a bit older with a slightly higher mileage than, say, you would if you were to get into a Golf 7. It is a more expensive car, but it could be nice to look at something like that. And then the other option might, of course, just be a Polo. You know, the Polo does 90% of what a Golf does, to be honest, in an even more sort of compact form, which is a little bit easier to live with, a bit easier to park. If practicality is not a huge issue, you know, and you're not constantly loading your boot, Then I think I'd just move down into a Polo and potentially save a little bit of money as well. So that would be my advice. And then, of course, if you were to shop around at some of the other brands, looking at some of the cars in the same segment, the same sort of financial advice would apply, I think.
Okay, Judy, I hope that's given you something to work with. Thanks so much for your WhatsApp. Jane is contemplating, well, wants to know if you would consider this a good move, swapping a Honda Jazz for a Daihatsu Terios. She says, we're a three-person family who camp and go away for weekends in mountains regularly. We don't travel big distances in the city. We don't have any desire for a 4x4, but we do love gravel back roads and remote places. Would a Daihatsu Terios be a good choice for them?
Yeah, I think that's what's quite nice is that swapping one car with a great reputation for liability for another car with a great reputation for liability. So there's not too much of an issue there. The Terios is an all-wheel drive car, but that's great because it doesn't have low range. It's not a full 4x4, but it is it's a very capable little thing, especially on gravel roads and sort of loose surfaces, that sort of thing. Quite sought after, actually, in sort of the off-road community as well, the little Terios. Very straightforward little car. There's no turbocharged engine. Little naturally aspirated engine that I think was co-developed with Toyota. Your only issue potentially with the Daihatsu is that they are no longer officially in the country. When they pulled out of the country, and my memory is a little bit blurry, I think it was about 4 years ago, they did do a nine-year deal with a local organization which is maintaining the parts warehouse. That deal may end and it may not get renewed, at which point it starts to become quite difficult to get parts. So that's just something to keep in mind with the Daihatsu brand. But like a friend said to me about his Honda recently, Honda parts are expensive, but the thing doesn't break, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
hopefully going to be the case with the Daihatsu.
Mine's due for a service soon, so let's hope that it stays that way. We've got Beth on the line from Pinelands, also asking about a Terios. Beth, good to have you with us. Good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon. And I think you have partly answered my question. We have got a Honda CR-V, which we've loved and enjoyed for about 12 years. And we think we should go to something smaller, but with a little bit of off-road type, you know, not serious capability, because we're around 80 years old. But we're looking at the Terios or the Suzuki Jimny.
So the Terios is going to be a bit of a better option for you in the city and on highways. So a bit more of an accomplished car in terms of its ability to cruise at highway speed. The Jimny is a very, it's so focused on being a great little off-road car and being extremely capable off-road that it is actually quite compromised on the road. And even the brand new one is not particularly great at doing highway speed and going around corners at such speed, which is a bit of an issue. It also really doesn't like crosswinds, as I discovered one windy day in Cape Town.
That's a big problem in Cape Town. Yeah.
Yeah. I suppose the technical difference between the two is in the Terios, you're not going to have the option of a low range gearbox at all, whereas you will have that. You will have that as standard in the Swift. So if you are looking for a pretty serious off-roader with low range capability, then your option you'll have to lean towards the Jimny. But I wanted to throw a third car into the mix, if you don't mind, and that is the Suzuki Vitara. So you do get an all-wheel drive version of the Vitara, and also a car with a great reputation for reliability, also backed up by data that we have from our awards survey. And Vitaras are, a demo Vitara, second-hand Vitara, are actually pretty well priced these days. You're going to come in sort of well under 200. If you go for an older car, you might even be looking around the 150 mark. And I think that's excellent value for that car. Obviously, the all-wheel drive versions are a bit more expensive, so keep that in mind. But what I like about the Vitara over the Jimny and the Terios is that you're going to have a lot more interior space, a lot more space to load up your stuff. So I think that's also something to consider.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your help.
Beth, thank you so much for your call. Good to have you with us this afternoon. Right, I think we can squeeze in one, possibly two more questions. Ricardo is asking Chiro about the Haval H6C. Is it good quality and value for money, etc.?
So again, we actually have a video on this. Okay. We compared the H6C to the Kia Sportage. And what was quite interesting at the time, at least, was that prices move all the time. But there was a price difference between the two. They're the same size car. And there was a price difference between the two of 150,000 Rand.
Wow.
And the Haval as standard actually had more specification and more optional extras in it than the Kia did. And that really is something where the Haval shines. So in sort of terms of toys and tech and functionality, the Havals are pretty much fully loaded, which is quite nice. They are, you know, they're sort of putting their money where their mouth is, which is what I quite like. And long service plan, long warranty, off the top of my head, it's a 5-year, 120,000. Stand to be corrected on that. But that's also, you know, that's a healthy warranty, you know, in a market where Toyota and VW only offer 3-year, and Ford offers 4-year, 5 years is a pretty solid warranty. Havals are doing extremely well. They really have seem to have found an audience in South Africa and found a lot of homes, and that's always a good sign. It's a bit too difficult to say whether Havals are going to prove to be reliable in the long term, because they've only really been on our roads for, I think, 3 years now. So the cars haven't got old enough necessarily to give problems yet for me to hear about. So, for it to show up in our data. So that's the one question that's a little bit difficult to answer. But in terms of the sort of ride quality, the interior quality, it's really not far off the established players. I think if you're blindfolded and you drove a Haval and a Kia back to back, you'd be pretty hard pressed to tell the difference.
Okay, that's very helpful, Chira. Thanks for pointing us to the video as well. So, Ricardo, if you'd like to go and check out the particular video Chira's just referenced, you want to get to YouTube and search for the cars.co.za channel and take a look at that video to give you some more input on what he's just shared with us. It's a channel worth looking out, whatever car you are considering, because there are lots of that kind of video and much more. And, of course, more information available on the website cars.co.za as well. Chira, great to have you with us, and we'll chat again next week.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Chira de Siena, cars.co.za, motoring journalist.